Hello and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at Japanese director Hirokazu Koreeda. Pretty sure that's wrong. And his 1998 film, Afterlife. Returning on the show today to talk about Afterlife is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
This is one of those movies, and in a good way, I'm not criticizing it, that makes you ask, like, so many questions, because you want to know, like, how does this work? Like, why is this like this, and why is this like that? And now, once again, that sounds like you're criticizing it, but it's the film that makes you think, you're thinking about all this, like, how we always just wonder, like, how this universe works. You want to know more, I think is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it really does make you think, because it is, in itself, kind of a thought experiment.
Mm-hmm. And what's so interesting is that this is the afterlife. We don't know. I mean, I'm assuming it's like kind of a purgatory thing. And I'm assuming it's for people who, I guess, in a way of saying, have made the grade to get into heaven. There's nobody who has like done horrible things here, I'm assuming. But it's so interesting. It's the after. And you think so many movies, when you die and you supposedly go to heaven, you can already get the images of like you're in a white robe. There you get a halo. You get wings. You're going to the pearly gates. Mm-hmm. There's somebody saying, you know, during your life, you've done this, and you've done this, and you've done this, you know, and then, like, there's, like, a stairway getting you into there, like, it's this sort of random station. It's mm-hmm.
Which looks a little
office.
Bit like the MVA.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's depressing. It's, mm-hmm. It looks like the kind of place where you go to be processed.
Yeah, and the whole world just, it's grounded, because the thing is, the whole story is that, you know, they're trying to recreate the greatest memory of your life. And you're thinking in the afterlife, when it's almost like limitless possibility, they can just take you to that moment and have you live it like for eternity or something. I guess that's what they're trying to do. But it's not. It's like a film crew, basically. Like, okay, we're going to make it like this. We're going to try and set it up. Like, they have this whole thing where they're trying, okay, he was flying one time. We got to make the wings like this. Do we get wings? How do we do this? Make it, like, give him the sensation of flying. And it's so, because like you think of the afterlife, limitless possibilities, and it's pretty grounded.
Yeah, it's also pretty behind the times technologically. I mean, the film crew themselves, it looks very amateurish. And then you can actually review all of your life on videotape, yeah. Which I thought was hilarious. There's lots of great moments that are subtly funny, like when they're all greeted in the afterlife and they say, you know, all of you, you know, I regret to tell you that you've died. So sorry for your loss.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. And yeah, it's like you said, it's like the MVA, and like even the thing when he's looking at the moon, mm-hmm. and you think it's this, you know, beautiful moon, and then you realize that's fake too.
Uh-huh.
It's just so interesting about this movie that nothing is like supernatural. The only really supernatural thing, like you said, is these tapes where you can mm-hmm. look back at your life. But even that, just crappy VHS tapes. I don't even have DVDs in the afterlife.
The way station also sort of seems like your brain. You know, it's very efficient, sort of, and it has all of these tapes, and you can sort of access mm-hmm. them, but it takes some time, and there's stuff missing, and, mm-hmm. you know, there's bureaucracy, even in your brain, even in this afterlife. It's, I don't know, it's an interesting way of looking back, because you would think everybody would want to review all the tapes, because, you know, what did you forget? Or mm-hmm. what would you see differently looking at yourself? They say, you know, speaking of all the cliches about dying, that there's your life flashes before you mm-hmm. kind of an idea. And when they were filming all the people, you know, their individual interviews, you know, a lot of that wasn't scripted. A mm-hmm. lot of those people are actually talking about real yeah. memories.
I think that's what really works well, because when I'm watching the film, I was thinking, like, it doesn't feel like scripted. There, you know, if it was like some, you know, polished monologue and they remember this moment when they were children or they were an adult, they got married or whatever, I can, you know, like Hollywood, they would like zoom in on them and even have them emote a little bit with a tear. And this feels like just to show the emotional impact. But this film, it's definitely more real. It's like, yeah, so this happened and I was this and then and this and this. And it feels very natural. And when I was watching this, even before I looked up stuff on it afterwards, I could feel like this feels like these are actually people's memories and not something from a script.
And some of them were really charming too, just the details that mm-hmm. they had. The one that always sticks with me for some reason is the guy talking about the girl who had the little bell on her purse, and he would hear mm-hmm. her coming, there's that little ding ding ding, and as soon as he heard it, he felt happy. And that's such a small thing, but they're all of the moments are small. Mm-hmm. It's all about the small moments that make up your life, which, you know, when you think about it, a film is also made up of small moments.
Yeah, and that's why this film definitely is a bit of reflexive, because really the way they're creating them, the main thing they do for you is basically shoot a movie for you, remembering your last moments where you're kind of the star. And I think it's a little bit, it's like almost like a commentary on filmmaking, because maybe like you want a film to remember is like the things you like most in life, the things you want to remember most. So maybe the way watching a film can be almost in a way biographical, because they're basically the directors. And there's the thing where all art is, somebody said all art is biographical in some way. So it was like these are directors almost creating their own vision of the best memory of their life.
Mm-hmm. Also, when you think about the Zen idea of living in the moment, you're supposed to always live in the moment. Here you actually pick one, and then you literally live in that moment forever.
Yeah, and that's the one thing I was a bit questioned, like, what happens exactly after this? Because, okay, they pick their memory, then they create it for them, they have them star in it, they film it, and then they have their last day at the station, they shoot it, they show them, they shoot it for them, and then supposedly they move on. Uh-huh. So am I assuming that it's not necessarily heaven, that heaven is just... It'd be heaven if you're repeating the best memory of your life over and over and over again. Is that it?
You know, they really avoid...
It's one of those things I have so many questions.
Yeah, there's no deity, you know, discussed ever in the whole thing. They also don't have a religious person die, if you notice. There's no former monk or a priest or, you know, a nun or anybody who might have an opinion about what they should be experiencing. That doesn't happen. But but everybody else also avoids... Except for the anarchist, who is my favorite character.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just always wonder, like, what? Like, I'm gonna ask you, what do you think happens? So it's just that when they move on, it's just them reliving the same day over and over again. Because okay, if it's the best memory of your life. Now, unless you don't, it just runs on loop, and you just start over again. You don't remember the memory after you've run it the first time. But eventually, if it's heaven, like, don't you think, even if it is the best moment of your life, wouldn't you think having it run through eternity would be a little bit tiresome after a while?
Well, I think, you know, not to get too New Agey, I think it's supposed to sort of represent the way cinema itself can transport us from one spiritual state to another. So I think it's the conduit, and it takes you to the next whatever it is. The same way film does while you're watching it. You know, you're sort of in a state of suspended animation. It takes you somewhere.
It takes you somewhere, and you'll always be there, even no matter how long it runs.
I don't know what happens afterwards. That's a really open-ended idea.
That's why I love this movie, because you're asking these questions. You're not criticizing it, but you're just like, I want to know more.
The other thing I think is interesting is that it's not just that you pick a memory, like you just sift through and of all the good ones, you pick one. It's at the expense of all other memories. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to actually close the door to all other possibilities for this one idea. And that's the part that's really interesting. When we talk about this in class, I'll say, you know, think about this, because you can choose a moment in time when things were good before they went bad. And you'll never know that they went bad in your memory, because it's not included. You're picking this moment of time. So you can pick a moment in time when you didn't know something that you wish you didn't find out.
That's a good point, too. And, you know, and it's also interesting that I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's implied that all the people that work at that station couldn't come up with the memory, and that's why they're there. And I always find that interesting, because if they've been there for that long, I think eventually wouldn't you just, like, come up with something, even if it's not the best memory, just like, whatever, I don't want to stay here at this station the rest of my life.
See what you just said, the rest of my life.
It's
like that conundrum. Well, interestingly, you know, they give you a couple of characters to follow who are like the counselors, who are like stuck with this bureaucratic job as punishment for not coming up with something. And the young guy, you can see he died young in battle. And then his intended married somebody else, and he actually ends up helping that man go through his tapes. And he watches them, and he sees that, you know, it was just an okay marriage. You know, no fights or anything, but
nothing really passionate.
And then he finds out that, because I guess there's more than one way station, when his fiance had passed, she made a movie. Of course, they've got that in videotape, too. So he views it, and he sees something he didn't expect. And that lets him move on.
Yeah, and I think that's actually one of the strongest parts of the movie, I think, is that arc, that storyline. Him finding out that guy was, you know, his wife's next husband after he passed away, and sort of even the way that guy sort of like realizes, like, I know who you really are, and mm-hmm. Thank you for not, like, you know, being in a conflict, and then him realizing that the best memory of my life was similar to what he had when he was sitting in the park with her, and that's the last moment I saw her when I was sitting in the park with her before I went off to war. Mm-hmm. It's a great moment when he moves on.
Mm-hmm. It's a great moment when you realize that he realizes that he had a role in someone's happiness that he mm-hmm. never knew, which is kind of also one of those things you sort of hope you find out on the other side. But then there's the girl who, and I think this is such a wonderful moment of irony, she finally meets the man of her dreams there in the afterlife. Yeah. And she can't take that memory with her because that's not part of her quote unquote life. And she doesn't want to give it up. And she's angry that, oh, great, now I mm-hmm. fall in love with somebody.
That way station is like, even like when she goes scout, you know, on location shooting, once again, a lot like a film, yes. when she's going around town and we're like, what is that town exactly? Because it, like, okay, so other people live it. So I would just assume that they stayed in that way station for life. They just live there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking it's like they have a house where they stay, or maybe I'm wrong.
It looked like they had dorm rooms.
Yeah, they had dorms.
Kind of a thing.
Okay. Never
mind. But you're right. There is a whole world out there that they're not really supposed to interact with. Kind of strange.
Yeah, it is strange. And once again, I know this is a cliche thing to say, but the world building of this, you know, this universe, you don't really know, like, what exactly is going on, but that's sort of in a good way where it just leaves you to interpretation, where nowadays they would over-explain everything.
I also like the thread with the really young girl who obviously died way too young, who's only, you know, the only thing she can think of is, you know, a wonderful day at Disneyland. And it almost makes you think about that age when you think, well, okay, what did everybody else do? So I have to kind of do the same thing everybody else does.
Yeah, and you remember when she comes up with that, the mm-hmm. woman says, you know, you're not the, you're that's a very common favorite memory for a lot of girls who die your age, their memory at Disneyland.
Space Mountain.
Yeah.
But they even have, that character is so perfectly rendered with the pink coat and the socks and the Mary Janes. Yeah. She's like frozen in time.
Yeah, and the question you talked a little bit earlier about the one guy who's like the anarchist mm-hmm. who chooses. Now, always wondered what exactly he was meant by that. Did he feel that he didn't lead? He led like a wasted life or something? So he's like punishing himself that I don't deserve to go to this upper state of enlightenment or whatever it is, that I should just stay here.
Now, he's just a spoiler.
Or he just wants
whatever,
to be
whatever the rule
the
is.
Mud.
I'm not doing it. And you mm-hmm. kind of have to like him for that. You also have to like that he cuts right through it with the question everybody's wondering, which is, when everybody comes here, like people who commit crimes and stuff, you know, all that they told us before, that was all lies. Everybody comes here. And it's almost like he's thinking, well, I think I was lied to. I refuse to have anything to do with this mm-hmm. system. And he's very entertaining. He's also interesting in the way he befriends, in a way, the older man.
Yeah, the old man. Yeah, so you said, like, so I'm assuming you said anybody can get into this place, even if they're, like, horrible people who've mm-hmm. done terrible things?
Yeah, everybody ends up in the way station.
Because I was thinking, like, if this was, like, hell, like, that way station to hell or something, so what? Like, pick the worst memory of your life, and you get to relive it over and over again. But then, I was thinking, like, well, people just lie. I was like, oh, the worst time is when I went to Disneyland and had all this wonderful time. It was totally terrible.
You know? Hated every minute of it, yeah. Yeah, you get the idea, though, that maybe there's more than one of these offices. Mm-hmm. Because, obviously, the young man who died before he could marry the woman of his dreams, she did die at some point. And he was already there in the afterlife, so he missed her.
Yeah, and I believe he said he's been shuffled around a lot of way stations because one of the things he says, like, I've only been here for 3 years, but he's really 75 years old in real life and art time, so he would have been moved around a lot of places.
Yeah, I also wonder when they're, if you, you know, when you think about it, like, in the, all of the different ways you're supposed to think about it, if you end up doing that job for too long, do you get too jaded? You know, do you see enough movies that look kind of fakey to you that, you know, trying to pick your own seems sort of trite? You know, what if you mm-hmm. secretly wanted to do Space Mountain? Now you can't because, you know, everybody's like, Space Mountain. Everybody does that one. You know, there's a judgment that you understand in a way that the other people who go on through don't. There's leaving behind people who don't want to be forgotten. You know, there's new moral issues.
Yeah, and you're right. They do seem a bit jaded because I remember one time when it's the very beginning of the film and they're going over the case files, like, okay, here's this person. We don't know this. And they were criticizing one of the guys, like, how can he do this? How can he do this? And he says, you know, don't get too attached. Don't get too attached. Like, if you do that, you're not fit for this job.
They also have a character who reviews his whole life and just thinks there's nothing worth remembering. What a sad commentary. It's one mm-hmm. of the other things to think about. You don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, which was a good deal. Most of them are because that's why they're stuck there. It's like they don't really have anything to remember, like the anarchists, they just refuse to have anything to remember.
I also like what the anarchist says about, well, because he's, you know, thinking of the ways to game the system, right? Well, can I use like a dream?
Yeah.
And then he makes a perfectly cogent argument that, you know, we remember a lot of things that aren't really quite accurate. So why couldn't you make something up, like an ideal of what you wish your life could have been, and then recreate that to go? But apparently it has to be real. Why is that?
Yeah, and couldn't you just, like you said, how would they know? Would they really know if you made something completely up? Like, oh, this time I went to, you know, Disneyland or something, even though you never went to Disneyland.
Yeah. Yeah, the time I played in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like you talked a little bit earlier, I like how, you know, this is all about the afterlife and what happens after death, and, you know, we can argue whether it's purgatory or you're moving on to heaven or you're moving on to hell. It really stays a lot away from religious subjects. Mm-hmm. Like you said, there's no priests, there's no like imams or rabbis or anything. Mm-hmm. I think that's what's interesting. It's not saying anything about religion, but that's not because that's not really the point. It's just, well, what happens after you die? And here's what is, and it's the thing is, well, if you had a choice, what would you have as the best? What would you want to relive for eternity of the mm-hmm. best of all your memories?
Which is an interesting experiment anyway. You know, if you've never thought about that, it is worth thinking about. What would be that one singular moment? And what if you didn't have to share it with anybody? What if it could be totally private? Mm-hmm. Because you also have to think, whatever you pick has to be reenacted.
Mm-hmm. You have to realize, I'm going to be for eternity, mm-hmm. you know, forever and ever and ever. So it's got to be a good one.
It's got to be a good one.
Yeah, and definitely, I guarantee after whoever sees this film, they're always going to ask themselves, you know, really, what really was the best memory of my mm-hmm. life? That's what I did when I watched it. I'm pretty sure that's what you did when
I
you
did
watched
too.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was, you know, a lot of things that you think would have been the one you'd pick aren't, you know, when you really think about them.
Yeah, it's like, well, this, but like, oh no, because then after that, this happened mm-hmm. and that wasn't really that fun, or oh, this was a great time, but then like the couple hours before that, something really bad happened. Mm-hmm. So you always got to think about it.
Because you think of it in context, mm-hmm. you know, of everything else.
And what I also liked about the movie is, even though it's an afterlife, it's never just, it's all old people. You know, people, mm-hmm. there are old people in this movie, but it shows even like young people, all ages. You got people who are like 70 or 80, but then there's a guy who's like in his 40s or 50s, and then you got like this teenager, and then you got like this young guy in his 20s. So it's like and I think that's interesting. It shows, you know, people die, and it's not like very late in life.
Right. Some people have, you know, they can review those tapes a lot faster than others because they didn't have as much. They don't have any actual children, though. You notice that?
No.
They must go to a different way station.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wonder what they do with that. Well, see, you know, then you have to come up with
case for, you know, special, you know, one for youth who've died too young. And what if, like, a baby passes away? Like, well, they might not even be able to remember anything. So what do they do?
Yeah, what do they do?
It's one of the things you're always asking, how many questions, you know?
Now, in class, we've used this in film and philosophy. So it's, on the one hand, here's a viewpoint on the afterlife that maybe you've never considered, and it's Asian. But what's striking about it, of course, is it's a Japanese movie made by a Japanese director for Japanese people. So everybody in it is obviously Japanese. But mm-hmm. if this was an American movie, you'd wonder, where's everybody else?
Mm-hmm. You would ask for diversity.
Yes.
Where's white? You got a white person.
Because it would be some sort of statement.
Yeah.
You know, if you only had Asian people, then what happened to all the other people? Or even if you made it, you know, all women, you know, what happened to all the men? It's mm-hmm. so, you know, specific, as if the only people who make it to the afterlife are Japanese. There's a statement there that isn't intentional.
Maybe like, you know, the afterlife is just like in the globe, like, the, you know, this is the Japanese afterlife. This is the European afterlife. This is the American afterlife. This is the Mexican afterlife. Like, just like in the globe, it's all separated into the different parts of the world. And one of the questions I had was, what was the deal with the marching band? Did you get that?
I didn't get that either.
I didn't really know what they were, because they're teaching them. They go throughout. They're playing this tune, and they play it during the during their last day when they view the film. Was it just for the ceremony?
I think it was just for the ceremony.
I was thinking too much into it. A little bit of,
you know, karaoke kind of a thing, but just sort of a pomp and circumstance. Everybody gets to participate. Everybody plays.
Just like in like you said, right, when graduation, you hear that song all the time. Da, 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 da. Yeah. Okay. And what also really interesting about the movie, like we talked about earlier, how grounded it is, like there's no special effects in this movie at all. The only kind of somewhat special effects you get is like when they're entering through the gate with all the clouds. But that could be, I could do that. If all you got to do is get a smoke machine and some lights and boom, you're good. That's nothing. I think that's what's so interesting. Once again, even though it's the afterlife and we've seen so many movies with all these big sets or special effects or anything, like this is just, here's a smoke machine and some lights.
Mm-hmm. Now, if there are other way stations, can you request a transfer? Like, I don't like any of these counselors. Nobody understands my dream. So can I be transferred to the Western unit?
Yeah. Yeah, just once again, so many questions. And there's a lot of other, we could talk a little bit about the other similar movies like this. One of the things I was thinking of when watching this a little bit was the German film Wings of Desire, Wim Wenders.
Love that movie.
It's a great movie. And don't watch the American remake, the one with Nicolas Cage and Meg Ryan. Don't watch that.
No, don't do it.
But the original one is great. And that, even though that's more of like, once again, it's a little bit similar in a way where that film's about these angels. And in a way, sometimes they sort of, they choose at certain places when to help humans. And once again, it's just helping them, you know, whether they want to move on with their life or, you know, something. So once again, that was a bit similar.
Yeah, and that has Peter Falk in it too, as someone who knows. That they're there, which is, and it's such a great role for him. It makes me think of Defending Your Life with Albert Finney and, is it Albert Finney? Meryl Streep. And that's one of those, you know, you kind of look back at your life and have to defend it to God. But that has definite religious overtones to it, don't you think?
Yeah, and what's interesting, Wings of Desire, but about Peter Falk, one of the things I thought was kind of strange about the movie is that, because Peter Falk is playing himself in the movie, and then it's revealed that Peter Falk was actually an angel. So it's just weird that the film was actually saying Peter Falk is an angel from heaven. But
yes, which is a great kind of statement to make. Also, the movie Heaven Can Wait.
With Amici?
I think so. It's Warren Beatty, isn't it?
Oh, that one. I haven't seen that one yet, but I've seen, there's another film called Heaven Can Wait. It's with Gene Tierney. It was directed by Ernst Lubitsch. That's the guy's name.
There you go. Yes.
Yeah. Heaven Can Wait. And it's another thing where this guy, he's at this way station sort of in between purgatory and heaven. And they're saying, well, do you think you've deserved to go to heaven? It's like, here's all the things you've done in your life. And he's like this notorious womanizer and everything. So do you, after all this? And then it's very, very much like that.
It also reminds me, of course, of It's a Wonderful Life a little bit, because that's one of the names that they call it in Japanese, you know, to reference that movie. And it does have that sense of you don't really know the value of your life until afterwards.
And even another movie, which was all remade into Heaven Can Wait, the Warren Beatty one, was Here Comes Mr. Jordan.
Yes.
Yeah, that's another one. It's a good one.
And then there's all the movies where somebody's died, but they're still here, like Topper.
Yeah, or even like
The Ghost of Mrs. Muir.
Ghost of Mrs. Muir. So a lot of stuff like that. And
even, so they're gone, but they're not all the way gone.
Yeah, and one of the things is the episode of Beavis and Butthead when they die and go to, they think they're in heaven, and it goes, well, you know, you did this and you did this, and it's like, you did this number 2,345th time. And it's like, well, I'm still in heaven, right? No, you're not. And then he's supposed to be God. He turns into hell and he's going to hell. Yeah,
this movie does not deal with hell at all.
Yeah, which I always thought was so interesting. It seems like, like you said, it seems like everybody gets into this place. And they're like, well, that doesn't seem fair, isn't it? Because then horrible, monstrous people, like, they still get to live the best moment of their life. So it was, yeah. But once again, it's not getting diving extremely into that religious debate,
mm-hmm. which is interesting when you think about the fact that it's talking about afterlife. You know, to mm-hmm. to not have a religious context is sort of daring.
Yeah, that's what I liked about it, because I think when you make a movie like this, I imagine like there are going to be religious groups that are going to be very touchy about this, and I like how it probably. I imagine this probably didn't offend any kind of major religious organization.
No, it doesn't make a stand that offends anybody.
So are there any other, looking at the, this is the only film of his I've seen, I've probably mispronounced this, but Hirokazu Koreeda, mm-hmm. and I know two of the big films that were showing up on him was a film called Nobody Knows and mm-hmm. Still Walking. So you could talk a little bit about those films if you want.
Well, Nobody Knows is that's a heartbreaking movie about some kids who are left behind. They're abandoned by their mother in a Tokyo apartment. And, you know, they do their best to live by their wits, and it's one of those movies where the statement that they're making is, you know what, not everybody is born to be a parent. You know, some people really, really screw it up. And the kids are sort of left to fend for themselves. That's a powerful, powerful movie. And then, but he loves these kind of subjects that make you think about stuff that most people don't even talk about. There was a movie that's called, I think, A Father and Son or something like that, that got an award at Cannes, which is about a guy finding out that he's not really the biological father and, you know, what makes a person a parent. And then there's a movie called After the Storm, which is also pretty well known by him. And I watched it. It's about a guy who works as a private eye, but he's got a gambling problem and he's got a child to support. So it's all these sort of philosophical questions that you ask yourself about various characters. The director originally wanted to be a novelist.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I think that sort of shows. He likes stories, and he likes people's backstories, and he likes character studies.
Yeah.
And they're not always going in a happy place.
Yeah, that's what's really interesting about this film. It feels like a documentary, and it takes you through this whole process. It's like, you know, when they have the meeting, mm-hmm. like, okay, here's case study number one. Here's case study number two. Here's what we're going to try to do. And, you know, you have this many people to work with this week, and you have this many people to work with this week. And then when they're trying to make the film production, like, how are we going to get this set up? How are we going to get this set up? That's what's so interesting. Here's something about the afterlives, and he shoots it like a documentary, which was really interesting.
Yeah, and it's even like Monday. Mm-hmm. And then what happened
Tuesday?
Tuesday, yeah. It's interesting you say documentary, because he made this film after he sort of cut his teeth making documentaries.
Interesting.
So I think that might have been just part of his sensibility.
Yeah, like he just takes you through the whole process. Like, well, here's how they make these memories, and here's how they try to get you through the next level, so to speak.
Yeah, but leave it all open-ended enough where you think, oh, what happens afterwards?
Exactly. Okay, then, getting close to my questions, is there anything else we haven't talked about that you want to bring up now?
About this?
Well, about the film or the director or anything in general?
What was your favorite story of all the ones? Like, I love the one about the bell on the purse. I found that very memorable for some reason. Was there anything that stood out to you as a well-done moment?
Probably the big one with the old man trying to remember, and he realized it was the moment he just sat in silence with his wife and the park bench, which then led to the other guy realizing he had his favorite memory was somewhat similar with the same woman.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably it was the most powerful part of the story, I think,
yeah.
For me.
It's a movie that you cannot watch a clip from. When I've tried to show a clip in the class, you have to have the setup or nothing makes any sense.
Exactly.
And you have to watch a significant amount of it before you kind of understand what it's all going to mean. Like, you can't build up to the story about the young man who died in the war without any, you know, there has to be some setup and then the reveal. So it's very hard to show just a portion of it or just a day, like just show Tuesday, because so much depends on what comes before and after.
Yeah, you got to know the whole context.
Okay.
Well, then last question I'll have is just tell us a little bit about the classes you have coming up.
In the fall, I'll be teaching Intro to Film, American Cinema, and World Cinema, but also Film and Philosophy with Dr. Helen Mitchell, in which we will discuss afterlife.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been discussing Japanese director Hirokazu Koreeda and his 1998 film Afterlife. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Russell Westhave, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying so long, and we will see you next week.